welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to be talking about your new project. We've got a stack of 4 Raspberry Pis that we're working with. But before we get into that, let's talk about your old project, the one where you had Kali Linux on a Raspberry Pi 3. So why don't you talk about what that was all about and then some of the issues you were having with that?
Well, one of the things that I really initially wanted to do with it is kind of test my networking experience and see if I could do a project by myself. And, you know, I found myself a basic book. I thought the book was basic enough, but there were many problems, you know, when you embark on a project. And part of it is I wanted to find out where my weaknesses are. And boy, did I get a response. You know, the first thing that I noticed is that I didn't know enough about Linux. I mean, the basics of Linux, how to fix anything, how to, you know, enter a file, you know, the different things that you're supposed to know that are like the basics of things. I thought I could just like follow the book and then learn Linux right along with that. The second part of it was apparently, and this was really obvious to you, but to me it wasn't, you know, I wasn't understanding the relationship between client and server. And while I have always known that if a server provides services, and of course, if there are services to be provided, there has to be a client to provide them to. And I thought, well, I know this, right? But where the problem came in is like when we were doing SSH and reverse SSH, I wasn't really sure where one of them went and where the other one went, which is when it was really obvious to you that I didn't truly understand the client and server relationship and how they kind of related to each other. So you decided, well, I think we need to just kind of go back to basics, but instead of doing it through Windows like I did before, putting the network together and doing what we were doing, I needed to do this in Linux. And you got me 4 Raspberry Pis. We're going to be doing a data center. We're going to be setting up, you know, a file server, a web server, a DHCP server, and, you know, and what was it? What was the other one?
Right. So we're going to do, basically what we're doing is we're focusing on Linux, right? So we're doing all of these things in Linux. So the idea here is like what you said, it's going to be a data center. It's really just another network where you provide certain services that you would find in most networks in an enterprise environment. And you're going to do all of that on Linux. So the first thing is the operating system is Linux. And you're not just going to be playing around with Linux commands. What I want you to do is get in there and make it do something. Provide services. So you're going to work with DHCP, SSH, DNS.
Right.
Those are the ones that you're focusing on now. And then later on, you're going to be working with other services like file services, web services. But you're going to do this all on Linux.
Right.
And then, of course, there's a little networking that goes along with that because you have to manage the IP addresses and set up the network configuration under Linux. And all of that is going to help you with your future Linux projects, because once you finish this, you're going to have used a bunch of Linux commands. You're going to have set up different services. You're going to have done some Linux administration because they want you to go in there and take a look at the logs and add users and do all kinds of things that relate to server administration under Linux.
Right.
So why don't we talk about some of the hardware that you have? So you talked about the 4 Raspberry Pis, and that's in a special case, right?
Right. It's really cool. It's, it looks like a doggy bone, basically. And what you do is you just kind of stack one on top of the other. So,
yeah, and that was kind of a cool setup. That's something I found online. And again, you know, this project, one of the things you were asking me is about your workstation. How did I plan or figure out what you needed for a workstation? So in a project like this, we can kind of use that as an example. So how did I plan this project? How did I know the Raspberry Pi was going to work in this particular case? And what you have to do is look at the things that you want to do with or the services you want to provide, the kinds of applications you're going to run, the kinds of things you would like to do, and then figure out what software and hardware combination can we use with this. And in this particular case, the Raspberry Pi 3 was the perfect solution to this. So again, you have 4 of them, and the idea here is that you're going to use each one for various services. And depending on how well these things work, you're going to have multiple services on each one of these. Right. Because you don't just have to have one service on one Raspberry Pi. It's actually powerful enough to where you should be able to put multiple services on some of these Raspberry Pis.
Yeah, and what I thought it was really nice is that it's an inexpensive way to do a little lab and see how it turns out. And I was amazed how the Pi 3 is so powerful that you're able to do that. But we did run into a little bit of a problem with the software because we wanted to put Ubuntu on it, but we were having all sorts of problems. Why don't you explain some of the things that we ran into?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure I understand what the issue was, but when we tried to get Ubuntu on there, mm-hmm. we got it to run the first time, and then you did some reboots, and then it died. It wouldn't come back the way it was supposed to.
Right.
And then when I did some research on that, I found out that the Raspberry Pi 3 kind of came out almost at the same time that the Ubuntu version came out, and they didn't really have enough time to figure out how to get Ubuntu to run on the Raspberry Pi 3. So then we tried Debian. That didn't work at all either.
No, but you had me do a virtual machine and put Debian on it because the one thing that we can put on the Raspberry Pi is the Raspbian Lite, and you said it was the closest thing to Debian.
Well, so this is kind of what happened. We tried a bunch of different Linux distributions on mm-hmm. the Raspberry Pi to figure out which one was going to be the right one for this project. And we wanted Ubuntu because that's what we have on all of our Linux servers. We run Ubuntu. So I thought, okay, if we're going to do this and kind of match it up to what we already have for Section 9, Ubuntu is the best option.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why I chose to go that route. And unfortunately, it just didn't work right. So then we had to say, okay, in this situation, what are our options? Well, let's try Debian. Well, that didn't work either.
Right.
And then we said, okay, we want to have a server operating system on here. We don't need a GUI because that's going to suck up all your resources and you won't be able to provide certain services because there's not going to be enough resources with the GUI. So then I said, okay, let's take a look at the software that was originally designed for the Raspberry Pi, which is Raspbian. And so we have Raspbian for the desktop side, which is typically what you see on a setup for Raspbian or the Raspberry Pi. But then they have Raspbian Lite, which is kind of the server variation, but it's really the command line only version. It's the one without the desktop.
Well, one of the things that I want to do, because you and I were discussing this the other day, when I did the DHCP server on Windows, it had a GUI. It did everything for me. You know, I just had to click and select packages, and then it said select this, 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 and it will do that. I think what I'm looking forward to doing everything command line on Linux is so then I really have an understanding of what packages I'm installing them, you know, in there and why. So I think that was a good choice.
Yeah, and so this is kind of how your project has grown out of this 4 Raspberry Pi stack. And I had an idea of how we were going to do this. And then little by little, we started putting things together. And it slowly kind of grew into something that became bigger than what I was anticipating. So my original idea was for you to put together a new network using Linux and the Raspberry Pis. And we kind of sort of had to sit down and plan out exactly how we were going to do this. And one of the things that you've always wanted to do was better documentation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I always wanted to do was figure out a way to make this a bit easier because we're both busy. We don't always have time for our projects. I didn't want this to become such a huge project where you're overwhelmed and you're back to where you were before, which is not being able to understand what's going on. So the first thing that we did was we decided to break things into smaller chunks.
Right.
So you're going to have DHCP server as one chunk. SSH is one chunk. DNS is one chunk. And then you want to explain how we're doing the documentation for these things?
Yeah, you know, we're doing checklist in our Docker Wiki. And what is nice is that the first thing that you wanted me to do was to say, okay, what is, let's say, DHCP or DNS? You know, what kind of service is this? What purpose does it serve to the network? Why are we installing it in here? And then go into the installation process. And then at the end, we're going to do the commands to troubleshoot it because we need to make sure that it is working. So what was nice is, what is it for? How do you install it? Is it working? And for me, having that documentation again, when I get a job, it would be something nice, because if somebody says, okay, I need you to do a DHCP server in Linux, I'm going to have a basic list for me to be able to do some things on my own, that I may have to tweak it to accommodate what the network is and learn some stuff as I go along the way. That's all fine and dandy. But to be able to do the basic installation the correct way, understanding, you know, what purpose it serves to the network. Because one of the things that I was reading, you know, when we're all about security and what have you, one of the things I was reading on your Reddit thing, you were showing me some of the security thing, and this guy was like, okay, I need some advice on how to become a pen tester. And this guy was like, dude, you know, there's only a few people in the world that are like wizards and they can do this inside out and they have a new way of thinking. But if you really want to be good in security, the thing that you need to do is really understand networking, be a sysadmin, understand how the network is, how things relate to each other, you know, how the whole thing works. And once that you understand that, then you're going to be able to secure it. And that is one of the best pieces of advice that I thought, you know, I wanted to do that pen testing box. But again, now I know I had no business going there that early in the game, because until I know my networking inside out and I understand how SSH works, how DNS works, how DHCP works, how web server works, and how, you know, the whole thing relates to each other and how it's supposed to be, you know, when you look at the logs, is it working properly? Is there something wrong? Did somebody infiltrate this? So, you know, I really do think that when in doubt about security, the best thing that you can do is go back to the basics of networking and really get your networking mojo going on. So,
yeah, and that's really important. And I think, you know, when it comes to the documentation, one of the things that I've been kind of really bad at is making sure that I document the things that I do, that I write down the things that I'm working on, and making sure that I save that someplace. So a big part of what we're doing here is using DocuWiki, which is a web-based application. It's a wiki, kind of like Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier to work with than Wikipedia. I've never actually tried to edit a Wikipedia page, but there's another one called MediaWiki, and that one is supposed to be based on the same software that Wikipedia is using. And I've tried to use that in the past, and it was a little tricky. So this time I said, okay, we're going to use DocuWiki, which I have messed with in the past. But this time, I think because we're doing this in chunks, that makes it easier for us to actually put in the documentation. Because we can say, okay, here's a checklist for DHCP servers. Here's a checklist for SSH. Here's a checklist for DNS.
Well, and the beauty of it is that it really organizes it well, to where you can actually click on a place and go right to where you need to go. You can add links to it. You can do all sorts of different things in it. So I think it's a very useful thing. I'm not as familiar as you are with it. I just, you know, when you have me use it and you have me, you know, go here, do this, do that, insert the link over here. I find it very useful, and I really like how easy it is, because it does the organization for you if you just kind of, you know.
Right. So you have to go in there and do headings and all that kind of stuff. And you can do numbered lists and all of that. So I really like it. And then one of the things that I think is really important is that you can search it.
Well, yeah.
So if I go in there and I don't really know where to go, I can go into the search function and I can actually search for DHCP server. I can search for SSH. I can search for Linux. And then later on, we'll have Windows documentation in there as well. So then we can go in there and search for things that might be related to Windows.
Right.
So I think that this is really important to talk about, because when you want to do something in Linux or Windows or what have you, or you want to test something, or you want to use a new tool, or it's a tool that you have used in the past, but you haven't used it in a while, you go to your documentation, you search for that thing. And if you have got something in there, that gives you a place to start from.
Well, and also as technology changes really fast, but the basics of networking really don't change that much. So if you go ahead and you have your basics documented, and then there is something that went to legacy and now something new has happened to where it works in a different way, it's really easy to change that bit part of it in a specific section, then if you have to start from scratch and go, let me see, I haven't used that in 10 years. How did that go? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is a huge part of security because you need to have that documentation, because there's two things that go on in security that I think are really important to understand, and that is the different things that we work with. There's so many devices we work with. There's so many applications we work with. You're going back and forth between Linux, Windows, maybe a Mac, and you might have networking equipment like Cisco, Juniper, Meraki. Well, how do you work with all these different devices? There's no way you're going to memorize all of that.
No.
So I think that even though our documentation is not something I had planned on when we first started this project, I think it's one of the biggest pieces of this project. And I think it's the one thing that we can walk away from or take away from this project. And like you said, use it for the next job that we go to.
No, and like I said, documentation is tough because it takes a long time. It's not easy to try to sit down and figure out how to put things and organize them in a way that is not like super junked up and or like too little information as much as too much information. So to just have something, you know, a checklist that you can just go step by step without being like terribly verbose or like the books that we read, that they're assuming that you know this, that, and the other. To me, that checklist allows me to forget, but also gives me the power that if I need to use it in a project, I want to be able to take a look at it and be able to be self-sufficient with my checklist.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that I've done in the past that I don't remember how to do now. So one of the things we had an issue with was when we were setting up your Debian virtual machine and even some of the stuff on the Raspberry Pi, I had an issue with the network configuration.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I don't remember how to do the network configuration on Linux. Now, if you have a GUI, it's relatively straightforward. Whether you're on Windows, Mac, Linux, doesn't really matter. On the command line side of things, when you're on a server or CLI only, how do you do that? I know the configuration file to go to, but I don't remember how to punch in the information. Like, what information goes in there and how do you put it in there? What's the format for that? So we had to log into our Synology disk, or not our Synology disk, but
the
Gigabyte server. We went in there, which runs Ubuntu, mm-hmm. and Debian and Ubuntu are similar. So I knew I could take some of that information and apply that to Debian and then the Raspbian. So I had to copy the information, just changing up the IP addresses for your subnet, and then it worked fine. But those are the kinds of things that we really should have documentation for so that we don't have to do that.
And that's another thing that the DokuWiki is good. You can put your code in there. There's a way that you can actually put the code of whatever file it is that, you know, you're doing in Linux. So then you don't really have to sit in there. As long as you know what your network address is, your mask or whatever else it is that you're doing, you know, like we were doing for that specific file, you're fine, you know.
Yeah, so there's wiki syntax that you have to learn, which is not too difficult in DocuWiki to figure out.
Right.
There is some of a learning curve there, but there's a code tag that you can put in there, a syntax that you can put in there. And then in between that, those two tags, you can have, or you can copy and paste
the code
or the text you want to put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will just be kind of a special format for that particular part of your wiki page.
Yeah, no, that's why I think it makes it really valuable. I really like it.
Yeah, and then we've got some other things in there, plugins that you can add into DocuWiki that allows us to create a PDF out of that. So if you want to take it with you, you can just say, okay, make this a PDF, and then you download that, and then you can take that with you. So if you need to use it elsewhere and you're not, you know, on the network where you can access that information, you just take the PDF with you.
Yeah, and that's another thing is that what I was telling you, I would like to have a hard copy of it. But also at the same time, I would want to have it on an external hard drive that if I go into a job, I can plug it into my laptop and go, okay, this is how I, and then, you know, maybe print the PDF at the time or whatever if I need to. So I don't have to carry my laptop, you know, wherever. But
right, right. So now let's talk about how this applies to security, because we're really focusing on security. And you mentioned some of the things that applies to security. But when you try to get into security, as you mentioned before, there's a lot of things you need to understand. And unfortunately for us, we have to know how these work behind the scenes. What's really going on there? So when you talk about, you know, a web connection, well, how does that happen? How does that web connection happen? How do we protect ourselves with something like SSL or OpenSSL? Those are things that we have to understand. And the protocols behind these different services are things that people are going to ask you about when you take these different IT certifications. Or if you go to work for an IT department where they put you in the security team, you need to understand how these different protocols work. So things like TCP/IP, the OSI model. If you talk about something like DHCP, how does a client get a DHCP assigned address? Well, there is a DHCP request, there's a DHCP offer, there's special MAC addresses that are used because the client doesn't have an IP address yet. So there's a lot of things that happen even with that. And so those are things that we're going to have to know because that's part of security. You have to understand how these things work. And then the other thing that I think is really important is to understand even some basic things about the service. So one of the things I told you to do for DHCP is to take a look at the things that DHCP can do, right? And so there are some basic things you can do with DHCP. So why don't you explain what some of those basic things are, the very basic of DHCP, like the things that everybody knows or
right.
should know.
So two of the things that I was doing, like, okay, why DHCP? What kind of services am I going to get? Like the IP address, the network mask, the default gateway, DNS. But then when I was looking closer to it, you know, you can also, it can give you a host name, you know, a domain name. You can do the time server and the print server. So it's more than just IP addresses and subnet mask. Things that you're going to need to know, you know, and a lot of people may not know that that's part of DHCP.
Exactly. And how do these things apply to security? I think it's important to know they are there so that you know, hey, we have a DHCP server. Guess what? It's giving out this kind of information.
Right.
Should it be giving out that kind of information? Do you want it to be doing those things?
Right.
And then the other thing is, if this service offers these things, why does it offer these things?
Well,
where can we use these things? Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that you might want to do is use these things as management tools and making sure that, oh, hey, I have clients out there that need NTP time. They should be talking to that time server. Here's how I can do that automatically.
Well yeah, and one of the things that you know, I looked at, because you told me I had the problem with the server-client relationship, you know, I looked at the DHCP client, and then it's like, okay, you got to have that installed in all the computers because it's required so they can be automatically configured. So then I started to think, well, what are the advantages of DHCP? And one of the things that I thought it was really cool, changes only need to be made on the DHCP server. So then that way you don't have to go to every single little tiny computer and then just make the change in there. It's also easy to integrate new computers into the network if you have DHCP. And then also it helps with the conflict of IP addresses. For me, I'm having a hard time with that one because I keep thinking, well, it's DHCP. It's going to know not to give the same address to something. And then you brought that up. So what if somebody does a static address from the DHCP range?
Right. And so these are things that you have to understand about mm-hmm. these different services. So you know what they do. And then when something goes wrong, you understand why these things are happening. So if I'm on your network mm-hmm. and I have a device where I can change the IP address myself, and let's say it was DHCP assigned, or maybe I don't have it DHCP assigned, and I just randomly assign it an IP address. If that IP address is coming from or is within that range of DHCP assigned IP addresses, mm-hmm. the DHCP server is not going to know that I'm using that address because I'm not communicating with it.
See, and I kept thinking, well, it's a DHCP server. It's going to know. It's not going to give it a, you know, so.
So what's going to happen is your DHCP server may give another host on that network the same IP address that I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, we would have a DHCP, or not a DHCP, but an IP conflict.
IP conflict, yeah.
Because now you have two devices on the network that are using the same IP address.
Mm-hmm.
Or what might also happen is I assign myself an IP address that's within that range of IP addresses handed up by DHCP, and another device on the network already has that. And now we have, again, an IP conflict because two devices have the same IP address.
See, and me, I didn't think that that could happen because I thought the DHCP server had control and I guess had memorized and said, oh, no, nobody else can do that. So when you try to manually add it, it wasn't like that. So that was for me, again, something that I had to learn when I'm doing the research to try to figure out, okay, what can the DHCP server do? What are the advantages? Who needs to have this? What does it do? So it was really a good experience for me.
Yeah, and the thing that we want to mention here, and I think is really important for both of us too, is that while some of this stuff may seem simple, you really need to understand the basics before you can get into security. If you don't understand how these things work and what they do and why they do what they do and how you may have issues with them, then you're not going to be able to make them more secure. You're not going to understand what's going on if you have an issue. And so that's why we do this. Again, it goes back to understanding things like your protocols, your OSI model. How does the server work? What kinds of things are on the server? Why are they there? What is it supposed to look like when it's normal? And then what's really important is how would you go in there and find the hacker if the hacker did something to that system?
Right. Well, then that was one of the things that the one guy in Reddit also was saying, hey, what can you tell me about the OSI? Do you even know the layers? Can you even troubleshoot? How do you know where to begin? And another thing is when you check the logs, how can you determine, how can you, you know, you really need to understand what, how the regular network works, what is normal, you know, in order for you to be able to identify if there is something weird on the logs, like the NTP server on the log. Maybe that can actually show something if somebody's been messing, you know, with your network. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a lot of things that, like, for example, when I do my DHCP server on the Raspberry Pi, one of the things that I want to do is assign a static address that is on the DHCP range and see what it gives me, what kind of error it gives me. So then if I'm able to see that in anything that I'm doing on a job, I'll be able to go, okay, this is what happened. This address is probably within the range of the DHCP server, and that's probably why it's having this conflict, and this is how it's showing up. But I don't know how it's going to show up. The fact that you told me that this is possible, now I need to find out, okay, if it's possible, what does it look like when it happens, you know, when the conflict happens?
Right, right. And this, again, it all goes back to understanding what is supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And one example I'll give you, they had one of the SANS instructors that, you know, I was at a SANS event and the instructor was talking about this. And apparently, and I may have told this story before, but apparently what happened is somebody was working for the company and they thought there was something goofy going on with a Windows server. And they said, you know, they have this thing happening in the middle of the night. I don't think that this is supposed to be there. I don't think this is correct. I think we have an actual security incident. We need to get somebody in here to take a look at this because this is serious. So they paid this security expert to come in and take a look at the situation without fully understanding what was really going on. And the person who came in took a look at the situation and he asked them a bunch of questions. So what's going on? What do you see? Why do you think this is an incident? And little by little, he got some information. And so they went to the machine and he did some checking and he informs them that this particular situation, this particular event that's happening, is not a security incident. This is just a service on Windows that runs in the middle of the night, and it's part of the system. And that may sound like a minor issue, but they spent time, resources, money on that particular situation because the person who jumped up and down about it didn't fully understand how the system worked, thought there was a problem, got somebody involved and caused all of these issues.
Correct.
Made the system worse or situation worse when there was no situation to begin with.
Right.
No issue. So you have to understand how these systems work before you can really do anything on the security side. Because what you're going to do with security is you're going to go in there and say, these things are normal. let me look for something that's not normal. And that's how you begin to find things going on that shouldn't be there. But if you don't understand what normal looks like, how are you going to identify abnormal or the hacker or the malware that might be on that particular system?
Right. And that was part of the reason why we wanted to do a baseline on our network, just to kind of determine what normal looked like. So then later on, when we start messing with some of the security tools, we're able to identify the AB normal.
Exactly. And, yeah. And you know, this is kind of an interesting process for me, because originally this was supposed to be your project.
Right.
And as we started going through this, as I started seeing what it was we were doing, things you were learning, things you were documenting, I thought, okay, first of all, I don't document very well. I should be doing that. Second, you're asking me questions about Linux commands that I've never even seen, because you're also watching the...
My Linux videos on the CBT Nuggets.
Right. And so you're talking about commands that may not have existed when I first started learning Linux. And then I had to take a break from Linux and do other things, networking, Windows stuff. And so some of these new commands, I don't know them. And there were system administration commands that you were talking about. And these are commands that let you see what services are on the system, which ones are running, which ones are installed. There's a lot of different commands out there now that I've never used, because they didn't exist when I started using Linux, or I just never took the time to learn them. So there's all these different things that I'm seeing that we're going to be doing on this project, that now it's not just your project, it's our project.
I know. And for me, it's like, you know, when we were looking at that service status all to see if the service was there. And then it's like, well, it's there, but it's not turned on. And then you had to show me how to turn it on. And then we had to, you know, basically learn the commands to do all of that. So I'm documenting as I'm doing the videos. What I'm doing is making a list of the commands that are on the videos, because they go like really super basic, you know, all the way to what I'm doing. So it's a combination of, I think that I will retain them when I use them, because for me, you know, I can understand them when I see them. And what's really nice is that they say, okay, pause and try this command on your computer. And I do, and I see what results I get versus the ones that they're talking about on the video, and then kind of compare them. Because, you know, sometimes they'll say, oh, you'll see this file, but if I don't have that file, I'm not going to see it. I may see some of the other files that I have on my Linux box. So, you know, I like the fact that they actually don't just say, okay, here's the command. No, actually start typing it and see what you get.
Yeah, and that's the reason why when I thought of this project in the beginning, I thought, okay, you need to learn Linux, but we're not going to just have you sit there and type commands.
Mm-hmm.
You need to actually make it do something. And so
I think it's a combination between them making me type them for the homework so I can see what the results I get, but also you giving me this project where I not only am typing them to see what the results I get, but I'm actually using them on my project in a context that, like you said, I'm making it do something. So then that I understand why I'm using this specific command.
Yeah, and I think we missed something that I think is really important that we should have mentioned earlier. You have a Debian virtual machine, but we didn't talk about why you have that. So the whole point of the Debian virtual machine, and this is something that I think is really important, especially on the security side or in any kind of IT department, you should have a way of testing some of the things that you're going to do. So the Debian virtual machine is nice to have in this particular case, because you don't want to try and implement something on your Raspberry Pi, because then you might be in a situation where you break something and then you'd have to reinstall everything, because you may not be familiar enough with Linux and the service to understand how you're going to fix that problem.
Right.
So on the Debian virtual machine, you can take a snapshot. Once the snapshot's there, you can always revert back to the original clean installation and then reinstall whatever service or configuration you want to have on that particular system. So that's kind of like your test area.
Yeah, and right now that's what I'm doing. I'm doing my virtual machines and putting DNS and SSH and DHCP on it and see how it's working. So then once that we have them, first of all, we're going to do that and document them as we go along. So then when we do them on the Raspberry Pi, we have the documentation on how to install it, how to configure it, how to troubleshoot it and do that. So, you know, it's a nice way to be able to try it in the testing part of the network and then document it at the same time and then try your documentation on a clean Raspberry Pi and see how it works.
Yeah, so just to summarize here, you're going to be learning a lot about Linux because mm-hmm. you're actually going to make it do stuff with the services, DHCP, DNS, SSH, file services, web services, and then we're going to have a bunch of documentation which you're going to have on DocuWiki.
Right.
And you have a lot of homework to do.
Yes, I do.
So that's where we're at right now, and I'm going to be helping you with some of that and learning along the way. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, did you have anything? I know that you mentioned the other day when we did the Meltdown Inspector on the show that we did that you have a few things that you wanted to add?
No, there was the Raspberry Pis. Why don't you talk about
that? Well, one of the things that I wanted to find out was how Meltdown Inspector affected the Raspberry Pi. So I was going to do homework on that, but Damien found this article to where they talked about that it doesn't affect the Raspberry Pis. So why don't we put the link in the show notes for people to be able to look at it, you know, because we're going to kind of look at the whole article ourselves. I read part of it and I thought, oh, it's really cool because you don't have to worry about that. And then the guy was like, so don't run out and get a Raspberry Pi to substitute your i7, you know, but yeah. You know, I think it's a good article and I think it'll be worthwhile for anybody that is doing any kind of project with a Raspberry Pi, you know, to take a look at it and see.
Yeah. So I think that's it. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us. And then if you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.